News, I'm Michael Brown. The Iranian news agency says Iran will announce partial withdrawal from the six-nation nuclear deal Wednesday. The announcement will come exactly 1 year after President Donald Trump said he was pulling the U.S. out of the agreement, calling it one of the worst deals ever put together. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani will send letters to the remaining signatories, Britain, China, France, Germany, and Russia, outlining exactly which parts of the deal he's abandoning. The 2015 agreement obligated Iran to reduce its uranium enrichment program in exchange for sanctions relief. The U.S. reimposed sanctions on Iran when Trump tore up the deal. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with Iraqi leaders Tuesday after flying to Baghdad because of what were called international security issues. Pompeo said he wanted to assure the Iraqi leaders the United States stands ready to protect Iraqi sovereignty and to reiterate the U.S. need for Iraq to protect Americans in the country.
I wanted to go to Baghdad to speak with the leadership there to assure them that we stood ready to continue to ensure that Iraq was a sovereign, independent nation and the United States would continue to help build out partners in the region.
The visit came after the United States announced it was speeding up the arrival of naval aircraft carrier strike group to the Arabian Sea and deploying a bomber task force in response to a potential Iranian threat. The Trump administration has been working to apply what it calls a maximum pressure campaign against Iran to try to get the country to change its behavior, including its sponsorship of terror groups and what the White House alleges is a ballistic missile program that threatens the United States. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence announced the lifting of sanctions on Venezuela's former intelligence service General Manuel Figueroa. However, he was not as warming when speaking of President Nicolas Maduro.
The struggle in Venezuela is a struggle between dictatorship and democracy. Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power, and Nicolas Maduro must go.
Speaking at the annual Washington Conference on the Americas, the vice president also pointed fingers at Cuba, Russia, and Iran for help keeping Maduro in power. Pence also said the Pentagon is dispatching a military hospital ship to the region in June for 5 months to offer medical care to Venezuelan refugees and others. China says its top trade negotiator will travel to the United States to conduct a new round of trade talks on Thursday, even as President Trump threatened higher tariffs on billions of dollars of Chinese goods after he complained the process is taking too long. Trump Twitter comments earlier this week about the new tariffs sent Asian stocks and the U.S. futures tumbling on Monday and added uncertainty over the future of U.S.-China trade negotiations. Trump also said his policy of hiking taxes on Chinese goods is partially responsible for the U.S. great economic results. A shooting at a U.S. school outside Denver, Colorado, has left at least one person dead and several others injured. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
The scene was the STEM school Highlands Ranch in suburban Denver. Authorities say at least eight were injured in a shooting and an 18-year-old male was fatally shot. Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock told reporters two suspects were taken into custody.
We believe that both of the suspects were and are students at the STEM school.
The STEM school Highlands Ranch is a public charter school with more than 1,850 students enrolled from kindergarten through the 12th grade. I'm Mike Gracia.
The New York Times is reporting that between 1985 and 1994, Donald Trump's businesses lost more than $1 billion, allowing the future president to avoid paying federal taxes for eight of those 10 years. Trump portrays himself as a successful self-made entrepreneur and master dealmaker. The Times based its report on information provided by someone who has access to Trump's tax returns. The White House has yet to respond to the Times story. One of the president's lawyers told the newspaper that the tax information it used was false. House Democrats are trying to get their hands on Trump's tax returns from 2013 to 2018 as part of their investigation into the president's foreign business deals. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africans are voting today, but what are the chances of the main opposition Democratic Alliance Party?
One opinion poll puts current support for the DA at just 15%. If correct, it's a shocking decline for a party that just 2 years ago ousted the ANC in several cities.
That's correspondent Darren Taylor in Johannesburg, Malawi's election commission makes final preparations 2 weeks before the May 21st election. Sudan protesters vow to keep up pressure during the month of Ramadan. A new survey finds Uganda is going in the wrong direction, and Liberian President George Weah has agreed to meet his critics ahead of anti-government protests.
Looking at what I have seen over the years in Liberia, there have been no peaceful protests. That's the reason why the Liberian Senate met the president today, asked the president to meet the tenor of the demonstration, so he has agreed to meet with them.
That's Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia, but the opposition says it will boycott any such meeting until the president takes certain action. And who carried out the killings in Kenya's Marsabit County? Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Africans are voting today, Wednesday, and the country's chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, is confident of loosening the grip of the ruling African National Congress, or ANC. But political analysts say the DA has failed to capitalize on the chaotic rule of former President Jacob Zuma, which was characterized by high-level corruption and waning support for the ANC. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
One opinion poll puts current support for the DA at just 15%. If correct, it's a shocking decline for a party that just 2 years ago ousted the ANC in several cities following local government elections. Analysts say the overall competence of Jacob Zuma's replacement, Cyril Ramaphosa, has been a major blow to the ANC's main opposition. But DA spokesperson Solly Malatsi says surveys showing shrinking support for his party are wrong.
Even in terms of our own internal polling, we are on the right trajectory to maintain our growth.
He's confident that the DA will improve on its impressive performance in the municipal polls of 2016, when it won almost 27% of the vote. But political experts say even the party's traditional white suburban support base is disenchanted with the DA's recent infighting. Last year, it fired its own mayor of Cape Town, accusing her of corruption. And senior DA officials have in recent years made statements that offended many black South Africans. Malatsi acknowledges that cases such as this have been bad for his party.
Look, I think at the time that they happened, they were a difficult period. But subsequent to that, there's been very great momentum in the party to recover some of the losses that may have happened with it. And
research indicates many citizens haven't decided yet which parties to support. Malatsi says the DA is trying to win last-minute votes by emphasizing its excellent record in the only province it controls, the Western Cape. Both independent and state analysis shows the region to be the best in South Africa at managing public funds and service delivery.
For instance, Western Cape has the highest percentage of households with access to water and sanitation. It has the highest number of households with access to electricity.
The Western Cape also has the lowest unemployment rate in the country. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
It's 2 weeks before Malawians go to the polls to elect a president, and the Elections Commission says preparations are in their final stages for the polls. Sangwani Mwafulira is the spokesperson for the Malawi Elections Commission.
We got 14 days to go before polling, so our preparations are quite advanced. Logistic-wise, we have finished printing all ballot papers. We are printing them in Dubai, so we are expecting that they should come to Malawi between 13 and 14 May. We need people that will work during on the polling day. We are done with the recruitment, and we are doing training for them. We have already tried and tested our revert management system. It's proving to work perfectly. should add the issue of the voters register. We are done with printing the voters register, and we have dispatched it to our regional warehouses for further distribution to the councils.
These days, when you talk about election, you talk about election interference, whether it's from the outside or from the inside. In Malawi, there's been this talk between the ruling party and some opposition parties about whether someone is trying to interfere with the election. What assurance can you give the people of Malawi that these elections are going to take place without any interference?
We have done the best we can do, and we think we have come up with the best strategy. One, we should know that we are not having electronic voting. So everything is ever based on the polling day at each and every polling station. We have the voters register ever based, and then we have ballot papers too. So these are the crucial documents regarding the polling process. We bring the two voters roll, one for the polling staff and one for the monitors. So if somebody comes to vote, the polling staff will verify the person and also inform the monitors who the person is, and also the check in the voters roll, verify that the best right person is the one coming to vote.
Sangwani Wafulira is the spokesperson for the Malawi Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. This week marks the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, but in Sudan, thousands of protesters say they will not leave the sit-in outside military headquarters where they have camped for a month until the military hands power to a civilian government. Jason Pantinkin reports from Khartoum.
It's a time of celebration in Sudan's capital as protesters mark 1 month since starting a sit-in demonstration that saw the ouster from power of President Omar al-Bashir. The protesters wave Sudanese flags, chant revolutionary songs, and dance late into the night. And now there's another reason to celebrate, the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Despite the fasting and heat, protesters vow they will not leave until Sudan's new rulers, a military council, hands power to civilians. Before dusk, volunteer Khalid Sharif Ibrahim, a student, helps unroll long carpets for Muslim faithful to sit on while they break their fast. There's thirst, there's hunger, there's tiredness, but you are aiming for a goal and you must get to it. All these things, if they don't make you weaker, they will only make you stronger. It will give you a push forward to reach our goal, which is a civilian government, a democratic government, and a country for citizens with equal rights. Khalid says there is food for over 2,000 people at the sit-in, all donated by well-wishers. Bashir ruled for 30 years and is accused of corruption, atrocities, and curbing basic freedoms. While youth have led Sudan's revolution, people of all ages join for Ramadan in a show of solidarity. Abdul Shafar Ahmed Ibrahim says, "We want the freedom to change the situation. The pressure has become too much. We want freedom, that's all." As the call to prayer sounds at dusk, the protesters at last take their first sips of water and bites of food since dawn. Volunteer Khalda Kamil Abuker brought plastic tubs of rice and cold hibiscus juice to share with the people at the sit-in. She says she usually donates food to hospitals during Ramadan, but wanted to support the protesters this year. She hopes by the end of Ramadan, Sudan will have a civilian government. Khalda says, "We hope this sit-in can bring an honorable result, not just for Sudan, but for the whole world. If the demands of the youth are met, Sudan is going to have civility, safety, and the country will be moving forward." It is dark by the time the iftar meal is over, and then it's back to celebrating Ramadan and Sudan's revolution. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Today is Wednesday, May 8th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. In yet another effort to blunt off a planned June 7 national protest against his administration, Liberian President George Weah has agreed to meet with organizers of the protest. The protest, dubbed Save the State protest, is about what organizers are calling the worsening economic situation in the country. Mr. Weah has already met with one of his staunch critics, Representative Yeke Koloba. Senator Prince Johnson says President Weah and the protester should meet to discuss their differences because protests in Liberia have a history of being violent.
Looking at what I have seen over the years in Liberia, there have been no peaceful protests. Look at the West Riots, 1979. They said it was going to be peaceful, but it ended up being violent. And so we don't want violence in our country. We do believe that the government may have some missteps. No one is perfect, but we call upon the planners of the demonstration to be bold, request an audience, to sit with the president of Liberia, to discuss it and come up with one understanding that will lead to resolution of this kind of a problem that we consider impediment to the progress of our nation. If they cannot succeed in getting the president to succumb, they can also invite the traditional leaders of the country who are eager to always make sure that they get involved in the resolution of conflicts in our nation. So I don't support demonstration. And also, we are at a stage where we contributed troops to Mali to help, and the jihadis and the terrorists threatening all countries are contributed troops to Mali that they will be attacked. So we do not want demonstration that will lead to a big problem that we cause the terrorists to infiltrate and then use our ground as a launching pad on Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Ivory Coast. That's the reason why the Liberian Senate met the president today and asked the president to meet the planner of the demonstration. And it's not out of weakness, but it is out of strength and courage. So he has agreed to meet with them. So I think meeting with the demonstration planners, there will be success. The discussion, I'm positive, will be amicable and very peaceful. They are Liberians. They have grievances. And I think it's better for the president, commander-in-chief, to sit with his citizens and find out from them, why do you want to protest? What are your grievances? And see how that can be a peaceful resolution to the reason why they want to protest.
The protesters, I think what I've read, is that they want to protest because they say that the president is not running the country in the way that it's supposed to be run, economically and politically.
Well, they may have legitimate claims why they want to protest. But we are saying we are living in the 21st century where you have terrorists threatening Africa, threatening the world. So you cannot carry out protest in the midst of threats. That is our fear. So we are saying to them, why don't you avoid the protest and sit with the president? I'm sure some of the senators who are part and parcel of the pending protest have agreed to sit with the president. And after our meeting today with the president at the Senate, they are going back to talk to the police who are going to be demonstrating to see reason to perhaps abort the demonstration and meet the president. The demonstration will be held depending on the outcome of the meeting with the president. It may be cut off, also depending on the meeting with the president. So we have hope that it's going to be cut off.
Senator Prince Johnson, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Well, it's always my pleasure. God bless you for always contacting me to find out more about Liberia.
That was Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The chairman of the Collaborating Opposition Political Party of Liberia, Benonai Yuri, says the parties will boycott any negotiation with the government until the ruling party officials and government ministers can stop insulting the opposition. Mr. Yuri pointed accusing fingers at the chairman of the Congress for Democratic Change, Malba Molu. He says the only way they can meet with President George Weah is if the ruling party chair is removed.
The ruling party in Liberia, the CDC, is still performing as if they're campaigning. They're not trying to unite the country. They're very divisive. They're attacking people all day. I mean, it's just chaotic. The chairman of a political party, we expect that you respect standard bearers of other political party. You chairman of the ruling party, and you would just get up and abuse people, accuse them, you know, it has to stop.
Is that one of the reasons why you're saying that you're going to put halt to every negotiation or every dialogue with the president?
What do we have to discuss with the president when he's trying to negotiate with us and the chairman of his party is abusing us and accusing us? So if he really serious about it, let him move his chairman. How can we negotiate with the president when his deputy ministers and assistant minister are calling for war in the country and insulting people? Then we must go sit and negotiate what with him? What, negotiate the exit? The next time he does it, we will attack Wia. And my God, he has a lot for us to attack.
When you say attack, in which form and manner?
Well, these verbal exchanges.
Benonai Ures, chair of the collaborating opposition political parties of Liberia, he spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu from Monrovia. A new opinion poll says 6 out of every 10 Ugandans believe that their country is going in the wrong direction. The poll was conducted by Research World International based on interviews with a statistically representative sample on based on official demographic figures between April 12 and April 25 across the country. Patrick Wakida is the head of Research World International.
We asked them, what are those things that are not going well? And the biggest fear for Ugandans is actually politics. People are uncertain of the future. The economy itself is not very good, because the majority of Ugandans, when asked how can you describe your personal economy, and people say the economy is worse within their household. But we also asked a number of questions regarding politics. We wanted to understand people's view, one, on the amendment of the constitution to remove the age limit. And again, they get approximately 70% of the people saying that that was very wrong. We went ahead and asked them, should Mr. Mseven contest again in 2021? And again, there you get the biggest majority saying he should not.
What then do you think? Because whether it's here in the United States or Europe or in Africa, a service such as this always tend to break down on regional or rural-urban divide. What results did you get?
Generally, we broke the country into two. We had the rural and the urban. But across the divide, you find the same sentiment. The 60% is an aggregation of rural and urban. The urban population of Uganda is about approximately 30% of the total population. And I think our rural population was about 67 or so. So the feeling cuts across. And what made this study a surprise to everybody is that for the first time, it shows that even the rural population is so awake that they can be able to assert their position without fear of contradiction.
How did the results break down between young people and older Ugandans?
Actually, that is the reason why you see the biggest negative. The majority of Ugandan voters, according to Uganda Bureau of Statistics, the majority of our voters are in the ages of between 18 and about 40. And the majority of those who were interviewed seemed to be so dissatisfied compared to the older population. If you look at the ages between 18 and 24 and 25 and 30, they are so dissatisfied.
Politically, recently in the news about Uganda, the issue of Bobby Wine, the parliamentarian, has been dominating the news. What type of political question did they address?
Our question was, if elections were held tomorrow, who would you vote for president if elections were held tomorrow? And again, there you get Mr. Mseven for the first time scoring below 50. In fact, his performance was as low as 32% on that question. Bobby Wine, for the first time we saw an opposition in between Mr. Mseven and Dr. Kizza Besigye. Kizza Besigye scoring about 13 and Bobby Wine scoring about 22%. The rest of the other guys scored really minimally in the ranges of 2.5% and 1.5%.
Patrick Wakida is the head of Research World International. He was speaking with me from Uganda's capital, Kampala. 11 people have been killed in Masabit County between the border of Kenya and Ethiopia. The killings that took place on Monday are said to have been carried out by individuals known to the locals. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the Gabra community leaders say the assailants hijacked a perceived meeting between Kenyans and Ethiopians, killing 11 elders from the Gabra community.
Kenyan borders with its neighbors have not been at peace, with the recent one now claiming 11 lives and leaving others injured. According to the former Turbin member of County Assembly at Tano Rio, the government should intervene and evict the foreign settlers. Wario said that the attack was carried out in the presence of Ethiopian District Commissioner as well as the regional police.
It is really unfortunate that the killing was orchestrated and executed by Ethiopian officials stroke administration, commonly known as Warada, of Dillo and Mega area. The masterminds of this heinous act are Mr. Buyo Huka of Dillo area and Mr. Hassan Huka from Mega area, who are in fact well known to the Kenyan elders from Gabra community. The massacre was in fact carried out by the knowledge and in presence of Ethiopian district commissioners.
The meeting that led to the clashes was prompted by the prevailing dry spell and the need to share the available resources in the region that is inhabited by Gabra community from Kenya and Oromo from Ethiopia. Mr. Yatani, however, blames the county government of Marsabit and the government of Kenya for settling the Oromo from Ethiopia and that the killings were well planned.
A peace meeting between the Gabra elders of Role Kenya and the Ethiopian administrative representatives of Mega, Dillo, and Arbale region turned into a bloody slaughter of 11 elders from the Gabra community, and three others were wounded. The said peace meeting was in fact a well-planned and coordinated to butcher these innocent Kenyans who are unaware of the heinous intentions of Ethiopian officials.
The elders insist that since the attack happened, no security personnel have been deployed in the area, neither by the Kenyan government nor Ethiopian. On the other hand, Marsabit County Commissioner Gilbert Kitio, confirming the incident, said that the 11 were attacked and killed in two different occasions by a militia group from neighboring country.
We have lost 11 people in two different incidents. The first incident, five men from a place called Parole, and it was said that the five were attending a meeting with their Ethiopian counterparts where they were attacked and killed by a militia group from a neighboring country. The second one happened at a place called El Hade, whereby six men were killed, bringing the number to 11.
Kenya's porous borders have been open to anyone, anywhere, and anytime, and this has cost the country lives of its citizens. Mr. Wario, however, wants the government to facilitate and retrieve the bodies of deceased who have not been traced 2 days later.
To further point out that foreign settlements carried out in Kenya is a direct slap on Kenyan sovereignty and integrity and must be taken seriously and dealt with immediately. We appeal to the Kenya government to facilitate the retrieval of the 11 bodies to enable families and relatives to conduct burial of their loved ones.
Yesterday, Tuesday, the clashes erupted again and injuries were reported in the area. The elders also said that they have credible information that the militia group is planning for another attack in the region. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Briefly before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Africans are voting today, Wednesday, and the country's chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, is confident of loosening the grip of the ruling African National Congress, ANC. But political analysts said the DA has failed to capitalize on the chaotic rule of former President Jacob Zuma, which was characterized by high-level corruption and waning support for the ANC. In yet another effort to blunt off a planned June 7 national protest against his administration, Liberian President George Weah has agreed to meet with organizers of the protest. The protest, dubbed Save the State protest, is about what organizers are calling the worsening economic situation in the country. And that is it for this Wednesday, May 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. We'll be right back.